Hi, everyone, and welcome into a midsummer edition of Scrambled Eggs right here on Crack Sidewalks, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Joe McCann and Phil Bush checking in. Phil, how's the summer going?
So far, so good. Lots of outdoor time and fun in the sun and a little bit of a Marquette alumni basketball to watch.
Yeah, it's like 100 degrees in Texas, so I stay inside. But we do have a lot to talk about, and we figured it would be about time for a check-in on Marquette basketball. Obviously, the TBT, the basketball tournament, is fresh in our minds, as Marquette had a great weekend. We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show, but we figured we were going to start this podcast with the actual team at Marquette University. So we're going to talk about the schedule, we're talking some recruiting notes, and a look back at the really cool celebration of 100 years of Marquette basketball. But Phil, let's start with the schedule. And the schedule is officially out, the non-conference schedule. And first reactions from me, Phil, is I think the entire athletic department, the Marquette staff, did a nice job putting this schedule together.
Yeah, for fear of us agreeing too much early in this pod, I think the schedule as it's come out, I think there's maybe one or two games left to be announced yet. But the schedule really seems to have taken care of all the issues that you and I have complained about numerous times over the years. And quite frankly, as a season ticket holder, I'm kind of excited for the home slate.
Yeah, I think when some early non-conference games got leaked earlier in the summer, I think there was some angst, and I can't say I'm totally immune from this, among the Twitter faithful over some of the teams that popped up, like American and Chicago State. And I was kind of a little bit worried that we were going back to the 300-plus RPI bargain bin. Yep. But as the schedule has come out, some of the teams that are actually on the schedule, the teams we didn't know, are some really good opponents. We don't necessarily have to go through it game by game, because I'm sure many of you follow Marquette basketball on Twitter and you saw the schedules yourselves. But probably the big surprise for me, Phil, the pleasant surprise, was Vermont being out there. This is a team that was 63 on KenPom last year. They have a five-year average on KenPom the last 5 years of about 109. And to me, that is a high-quality non-conference game. And much like Fresno State last year, it's kind of sandwiched between Georgia and Wisconsin. So it looks like it's going to be, just like last year, there's going to be a tough three-game stretch there in early December of Georgia, a very tough bye game in Vermont this year when it was Fresno State last year, and then Wisconsin.
Yeah, we get Georgia at home this year, so that's I suppose easier than it was last year with Georgia on the road. And but yeah, it's going to be a tough schedule, and it's going to be without Froehling. He's going to not be available until the Northern Illinois game on the 18th. So depth will be a little bit of an issue with those games. But to your ultimate point, is where you could have put somebody in there that was a 270, 280, a 300 plus team. I think picking Vermont, I don't think Vermont just on paper isn't going to be as good this coming season as they were this past season, but they're still, given their track record, a high quality opponent. They're not likely to struggle in the American conference, so it's a very high probability that they will have a high number when it comes to, or a low number, depending on how you want to look at it, a good number, we'll say, on their RPI and on their KenPom. So that'll be positive, especially going into this season where things like KenPom are going to be emphasized more and RPI is going to be de-emphasized.
Yeah, they're going to take those metrics into account a little more, which I think is interesting. And, this is just something in my opinion, but I think as far as bye games, I think you kind of want, you're not looking to schedule, Duke and Kentucky in all of your non-con games. I mean, you want to get some games that you can win. So I like seeing some of those teams north of 250, maybe around the 200 range in KenPom. And most of these teams are. The only one that's really bad is Chicago State, and Mike Broeker even said on Twitter when people were complaining about it that that's actually a make good from last year, a game that had to be moved. That was a game that was supposed to be played last year. Otherwise, Chicago State would not be on the schedule this year. So Chicago State was moved from last year. But everyone else that has been scheduled that is within Marquette's control, now Mount St. Mary's, I think that was assigned to them by the Maui Invitational. That's like a mainland game for Maui.
Yep.
But everyone else is pretty much more north of 250. Now American has been bad recently, so they were 307 last year. Now they're 5-year average the past 5 years is 242. So American's probably a bad opponent that's going to be around the 300 range. But Northern Illinois, that's a nice opponent that's consistently around 200 in KenPom lately. Vermont is a great opponent, as I already mentioned. Eastern Illinois, acceptable non-conference opponent. They were 220 in KenPom last year. Over the last 5 years, they're around 256. So, I mean, that's one you can live with. And then, you know, the Mount St. Mary's thing is interesting because on the surface, that would be a really good non-conference game, but they did lose two of their top players to transfers. So there's a lot of concern that Mount St. Mary's might not be very good at all this year. So it wouldn't be terribly surprising if they're in the 300 range. But that's, again, that's kind of beyond Marquette's control because that was assigned to them by the Maui Invitational. But overall, there's really only one game, maybe two, I guess you could say, that are in the non-conference schedule that are real stinkers, and that's Chicago State and American. Everything else, I think I you have to be pretty pleased with.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's going to be – and even the games that are tough games or you know, Purdue's going to be without Swanigan. You get Wisconsin on the road, Georgia at home. Seems to be a good balance of, hey, there's wins we – games we should be able to win. I mean, if we're sweating out beating Northern Illinois or Eastern Illinois or to a certain extent even Vermont, we're going to have bigger problems than maybe we should have scheduled easier in the non-conference. Right. So I think it's a good schedule that puts us in a position. And let's be honest, we're going to make or not make the NCAA tournament based on how we do in conference play. So the non-conference schedule just has to not hurt you. And I think this schedule as it's constructed is exactly that. If we're good enough to make a tournament, this schedule is good enough to give us some quality wins that we can hang our hat on.
Yeah, that Purdue game's really interesting. I mean, you talk about coming right out of the gate. I mean, you're going to play Mount St. Mary's, which should be an easy win. But, I mean, just a few days later, you're taking on Purdue. Now, like you mentioned, now Caleb Swanigan stayed in the NBA draft. So I was really concerned about that if he was coming back, because that could have been a early bloodbath at home.
Especially with our depth issues up front.
Yeah, so... But getting Purdue at home in that second game of the regular season, maybe that's one you can grab and get a really quality win early. Because Purdue, even though I would say with Swanigan they would have been a Final Four contender, a top 10 team, I think they're still easily a top 25 team with the guys they're bringing back. So that'll be a big challenge very early. And then you go to Maui, which looks like it's going to be a bear. We don't know the brackets as we're recording this for Maui, but we do know the team, Chaminade, which of course, you know, schedule-wise, you don't want to play Chaminade because that's a nothing game because they're a Division II school. But then you've got Cal, Notre Dame, Michigan, VCU, LSU, and Wichita State. Any mix of those I'd pretty much be fine with. Wichita State is probably going to be a top 10 team this year because they bring pretty much everyone back, including their coach, who that was in off-season coaching rumors. But I think Greg Marshall might actually have one of his best teams ever at Wichita State this coming year. Notre Dame should be all right. Michigan is always pretty good. And then, VCU is always going to be competitive and in the mix for the tournament. LSU, I don't know what to expect from them. Cal lost a lot, including their coach, Quanzo Martin. He went to Missouri.
Who was in the running for the Marquette gig when Mojo got it.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah, so now he's already moved on to another job. But Cal lost a lot of players too, so Cal would not be a particularly strong opponent, but it is a Power 5 opponent, so I guess, I wouldn't complain too much. But I guess, I think from a Marquette perspective, I'd love to play Notre Dame there just for the, because we haven't played Notre Dame, our old rivals, in a while. I think that'd be pretty cool. Then from whatever happens from there, whatever happens. But I think Maui will be tough. If Marquette can somehow to come out of Maui with two wins that are not Chaminade, I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
Overall, I think I'm very excited about the Maui Invitational and really the schedule as a whole.
Well, now, I guess the one question I would ask you about the schedule is, and as I alluded to earlier, you and I have complained, and quite frankly, the blogosphere has generally about Marquette's scheduling in the first couple of years of Wojo, and there was always a talk of, well, it's a really young team, we gotta get them experience. I think in Ellenson's first year we played something like 5 or 6 300 plus teams. I mean, it was pretty terrible, but there was always these arguments, we need to get the team more experience and get them better. I don't know that this year's team, there's no doubting that there's a ton of talent on this roster, but this team I don't feel is necessarily any more experienced or less experienced than teams previously. So what would drive this kind of scheduling change? Do you think it's more of Marquette recognizing how to kind of play the game a little bit with the schedule, or does this represent them having a higher confidence level in the team that they have as opposed to years past?
Yeah, well, I think as the team was growing, I think that includes the coaching staff and implementing their system with the guys that they have. And everybody on the roster now committed to Wojo. And so, I mean, this is now his team. And yeah, you mentioned Ellenson's year. There were a lot of freshmen. There were a lot of young guys, but there are quite a few upperclassmen in the program now who have been in Wojo's system for a while that he has complete faith in. So I think he's much more comfortable, even though the team is still pretty young, because there's probably five, six new faces this year when you include Froehling, even though he was on the team last year as a redshirt. But even though there will be quite a few new faces, the upperclassmen, as opposed to the upperclassmen Wojo had, who grew up in Buzz's system, the upperclassmen now grew up in Marquette in Wojo's system. So it's his upperclassmen is basically what I'm saying, as opposed to upperclassmen he inherited.
Right. So they feel more comfortable in the players they know, as opposed to the players that were no doubt experienced, but they didn't know what they had.
Yeah, I mean, there's nobody here that Wojo inherited. Everybody right. on the roster now is a guy who signed or committed to Wojo. So, yeah, I think that's probably part of it. And then, as you know, in the first couple years under Wojo, there were maybe some contracts that were agreed to under the previous administration that still had to be honored.
Yep.
I think that was especially true in the first year. And I think that kind of spilled over in the second year a little bit as well. But now I think as Wojo is entering his fourth year in the program, you know, every contract as far as playing games he has probably had a word in negotiating and had a say in pretty much every team on the schedule. So yeah, I mean this is a schedule that Wojo and his staff have completely had their hands on. So I guess to answer your question, that's kind of the change, is that the team and really everything about the team now belongs to Wojo, from scheduling to players to staff, everything. So that would kind of be my answer to your question.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. I guess the follow-up question is do you think this type of scheduling is how they schedule going forward, or is it going to vary year to year?
You know, there may be some variation. If, like, say, maybe a couple years, maybe they lose a bunch of guys for one reason or another, and maybe they decide to scale back. But I don't think it would get too much worse than this. Now, who knows? Maybe going forward, if the team becomes a high-level program that, you know, what I mean by that is a team that is routinely in the tournament in the top 25 a lot, maybe they may get a little more aggressive and maybe schedule one or two more interesting games. But I don't think it's going to be anything insane like something like Kansas does, where they schedule Michigan State, Kentucky, and Duke every year.
Right.
You know, I don't think we could ever expect anything like that. I think that's crazy talk for a team like Marquette, even if the program does continue to grow. So I think this is more or less what you could expect every year. I think you can expect, obviously, Wisconsin every year. I think you can expect a Gavitt game every year, pretty much, and maybe one Power 5, Power 6 opponent like Georgia this year. And, you know, it'd be nice to have a team like a rivalry like Notre Dame. I've been kind of hoping for that for years, to have Notre Dame on the schedule opposite of Wisconsin, where on years when Marquette goes to South Bend, that's when Wisconsin comes to Milwaukee. And then in years when Marquette goes to Madison, that's the years when Notre Dame comes to Milwaukee. So I think that would be nice to set up the schedule that way, to have those two rivalry games always alternating as far as home and away. But other than that, I do think this is a schedule that we can more or less expect, the type of schedule, I think, from Wojo and his staff. You know, a couple cupcakes in the 300s, but other than that, a lot of quality bye games around that 200-ish RPI mark.
Yeah, I think you said it all. I think you're right. I think the one thing that we will see, as nice as it would be to see some sort of Notre Dame Wisconsin alternating, I don't know that that's going to happen, but I think we will see that there will always, and you pointed it out with Georgia now, and we've seen it in the past with Wake Forest and other teams, there will be some, at least a very significant effort to get a home and home with a Power Five every year. You know, get a name program, you know, some year and they'll probably set it up so that we're on the road in that game when Wisconsin's home, and then reverse it in the other way. Again, because you got to make sure when Wisconsin's at home, that's one less game for a bye game that you have, so that you're much less likely to get a high quality opponent in, just because you got to get money to pay the rent and whatnot. So,
yeah, I suppose it is notable that Marquette's only true road game is Wisconsin. So, like, they go to Maui, but other than that, Marquette does not leave the state of Wisconsin until conference play.
That's true. I guess I hadn't really now, thought again, about that.
Again, they do go to Maui, so right. It's not like they're not leaving. So they do have that big tournament.
Yeah, but those are considered, even though you're traveling, those are considered neutral games. They're not considered road games for the purposes of RPI, right?
But yeah, the only true road game is Wisconsin this year. So right. I guess if I would add anything, it would maybe be nice to have one other true road game. But right. You know, again, let's not get crazy here. I think this is an acceptable schedule for the team Marquette is going to have this year.
Right.
So that's a quick look at the schedule. Unless you have any more thoughts on that, Phil, I kind of want to move on and talk about the Marquette 100 celebration.
Let's get on to the party.
Yeah, you know, I personally did not attend. I was down here in Texas, but I saw a lot of videos and saw a lot of reviews from other people who did attend. And I saw the videos that Marquette Basketball tweeted out, and it looked like a really cool event. I got to give a lot of credit to the athletic department and Wojo, who I think had a big hand in kind of organizing this thing and getting Jay Billis there to be the MC. Did you take away anything from that big 100 celebration, Phil? I think they did a great job with it.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I had a friend's birthday party, which was a murder mystery, which, I mean, was fine, but certainly would have relished going to the centennial celebration.
I'm just glad you weren't murdered.
I was not, no. And the person at our table who was an actor was not the murderer, so it was all good. But... I've talked to a number of people who were in attendance. They said it was very well put on. I was very pleased, actually, to see. I think it was savvy of Marquette after the fact to put a lot of the speeches and presentations that were made at the event to put that out, put it out on their social media so that the masses could consume it. Those who couldn't afford or could not attend due to geographical reasons attend the event. So I thought that was good. So you got to see a lot of speeches from a lot of folks.
Yeah, it seemed like it was really well attended. Both players, you know, from, you know, going back, you know, as long as they were alive, you know, going right. back, you know, 50, 60, 70, you know, I don't know how far back they went, but there were some guys who from way back who attended this thing. And like they pretty much almost every... seemed like almost every living former coach, aside from Buzz, was there.
That is correct. I was just going to say that every living coach but Buzz was there. I did talk
which
to
is
somebody,
understandable.
Which is understandable. I did talk to somebody who said that Buzz was extended an invitation but had declined it.
I wondered about that. If like that was probably an invitation like Marquette extended with the hope that he would decline.
Correct.
Like, yeah, it's like, you know, that wound may be a little fresh for some people, but I think I'm glad Marquette did extend the invitation because obviously he did have a big hand in the program.
Right. I think you hit it nail on the head. It was kind of one of those like, well, if you want, we're doing this thing. It's not going to be that fun, but I mean, if you want to come, that's fine. So
and
he wasn't
says no,
there.
And they're like, yes.
Yeah. Which again, I was really glad he wasn't there. And which may lead us to another former coach to reference, cause it seemed to be a bit of a hot topic, but I thought all of the presentations were good. All the coaches who spoke, everyone there was a lot of love around the program and was just kind of reinvigorating from everyone I heard. And with a couple of exceptions we'll talk about, I had heard, other than, you know, just generally Jay Billis being Jay Billis and a cool guy, I had heard Tom Crean, and I saw the videos and I can believe it, Tom Crean was kind of the highlight for a lot of folks.
I think that was great that, one, that Marquette invited him, and two, that he showed up.
Yeah.
And was a big
and not
of
only
it. And
showed
think,
up, but contributed significantly to the event.
He had, I saw his speech and the things he said to Wojo and, like what the program meant to him while he was there. And I think it's great that, you know, Crean, was back and kind of part of the Marquette family again. I certainly hope for his sake, assuming it's something that he wants to do, that he does get back into coaching and a job comes up in the next year or so that is interesting to him as a good fit for him. But in the meantime, I'm glad to have him back kind of in the Marquette family. And who knows, maybe we'll see him. I could totally see him as a television analyst for Fox Sports 1 or something over the next year or so, because I think he'd be pretty good at it. But I think it was great that they invited him back, and I thought he was like I said, everything he said, both in like television interviews and newspaper interviews, and also at the presentation itself, I thought was great. So I think that was a really good thing to see.
Yeah, I think it was positive, and I think myself more so than you. I for a while I was certainly anti-Crean, I think, for a while, and I've since come to terms with it and the way he
I mean, weren't we all? I mean, when a coach leaves, you're going to be a little bitter and right. a little upset about it. And in time, you get over it. I think in time, people will get over Buzz, too. You know,
yeah.
I think, you know, who knows? Heaven forbid Wojo unceremoniously leaves, then all of a sudden he would be the most hated guy in town, and then everyone would say, then they look back on Buzz more fondly. I hope that doesn't happen anytime soon, but coaches leave, you
right.
know, and almost all the time it is unexpected. And if Wojo were to leave for any job other than Duke, I think people would be like, oh, I can't believe he left, you know. And but I hope Wojo stays at Marquette a long time and wins championships and all that, but again, generally speaking, coaches are going to leave, and the most recent coach to leave is always going to be the most disliked. So when Buzz left, I think that took some heat off Crean. I think people were able to appreciate him a little bit more.
Well, and I certainly think, and while I agree with you down the road that eventually kind of the disdain for Buzz will go away, I do think that Buzz left a worse taste in everyone's mouth in leaving. No, I shouldn't say everyone's, but in a lot of people's mouths in the what happened prior to and after he left, which kind of made it permissible to be okay with Crean again, right? Because like, all right, Crean left, but he really wasn't that bad a guy, you know, and so that kind of worked out. Now, having said that, I did talk to a few stalwarts who were vehemently anti-Crean, and one of whom claimed the whole evening was ruined simply by Crean being there. But I think that may speak to to
that's
other
probably
issues.
The minority.
Yeah. And yeah. Not only is it the minority, but it probably speaks to things that they need to work on personally as opposed to...
Yes, probably says something more about him than it does about Crean.
That is correct.
I just, you know, it's time to get over some stuff and move on with our lives. So I thought the celebration was great. Crean was great. If he's not doing television or coaching this year, it'd be cool if he does hang around the Marquette program and, you know, pops in every now and then or does TV appearances or whatever. So I thought all that was really good.
I'm excited about the other thing, just to kind of tie this up, is I was excited
sure.
about seeing the athletic department come up with new things. Like, I know that's a once every 100 years kind of thing, right? So it is going to be.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be making the 200th celebration.
No, I don't think so. But, I mean, it's nice to see that they're kind of – you know, because even Wojo within the event was kind of a different Wojo, a less structured, less, you know, kind of like I'm a stereotype kind of, you know, I'm doing the coach speak thing. He seemed to be more open and more free and was joking with the other coaches and stuff. So it's good to see that the program generally, Wojo and kind of the athletic department planning staff being a little more free and creative with things. I think that's going to be necessary for the program going forward as they continue to try and build back a little bit the panache, if you will, of the program as
yeah, just anything to keep the fan base
years.
Engaged. Like
yeah.
I know last year they had that open practice for season ticket holders, right?
Yep.
Which I think was a big hit, and there will be more.
Hit.
I'm sure there will be similar events like that going forward. Anything to generate a little more buzz, a little more interest, a little more excitement around the program. And of course, that was a big thing. It was a golden opportunity because really. Only once in your lifetime you're going to get to celebrate a 100th anniversary of a basketball program, so you might as well make the most of it. And I think Marquette did. So kudos on that. Good job. I do want to move on to a few recruiting notes for Marquette. You know, they only have one scholarship available for next year, as we've talked about before on this podcast. And really, everyone right now is kind of on Joey Hauser watch, which, you know, if you follow recruiting at all and you know anything about Marquette recruiting, you know Joey Hauser is Sam Hauser's younger brother. He is a top 50, top 40-ish recruit in the country. He's one of the best players in the country, probably the best player in Wisconsin this year. And he is Marquette's number one target. He has been for quite a few years now. Marquette coaches, despite their depth chart at power forward, they are still heavily recruiting him, and it seems like they definitely want him in the fold. Sounds like it's down to three or four schools for Joey: Marquette, Wisconsin, Michigan State, maybe Notre Dame, Virginia, also in the mix. But that's kind of what everyone's on pins and needles right now for, is that last scholarship is seemingly Joey's if he wants it.
Yeah, if he wants it and he doesn't get it, like, what has happened? They had an entire coaching staff down watching him play. So Joey Hauser is the number one. I think not only from a talent standpoint, but from a fit in terms of what the team needs going forward. It would make them relatively front court heavy, but I think you can do things like move Joey's brother Sam out to the wing more and less of a front court player. So, but it is clear that it is Joey Hauser or bust, and the names you're seeing out there in that same recruiting class are largely fallback position in my estimation.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's pretty. I wondered a little bit with the addition of Ed Morrow, the forward from Nebraska, who kind of plays the three and the four, how that might affect Joey Hauser's recruitment. And from Marquette's perspective, hasn't affected at all. Like you said, recently at the Peach Jam, which is one of the big AAU events of the summer, Marquette's entire staff was there. You know, they're all watching him. So, I mean, they're basically just begging him to commit and come on board. So they are ready for Joey Hauser whenever he wants to commit. No telling when exactly that's going to be. It seems like it could be late July. It seems like he's also said in a recent article I saw on JS Online that he might wait until September, might take a couple visits. Because, again, there's some other schools after him, as you would imagine. Michigan State and Wisconsin, of course, heavily involved. You know, wherever he wants to go is fine. Of course, I would be sad to see him go to the rivals in Madison, just because anytime your coaching staff makes a kid a priority for 3 years, if he's swiped up by the guys up the road, that's kind of a bummer in my mind.
Right.
Even if it is a great fit for the kid or whatever. But, Marquette has worked so hard to get Joey Hauser. I would love to see them kind of close the deal and add him to the depth chart.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, no disrespect to Joey or Ed, but if we're worried about Joey not committing because Ed Morrow is here, that's a
weird... I don't think the depth chart bothers Joey because, like you said, I think he's might be better than any power forward currently on the roster.
Correct.
To the guys they have.
Yeah.
And like Joey, I wouldn't say he's a one and done necessarily, but he's a guy who I think could be in the NBA after 2 or 3 years of college.
Absolutely.
He's that kind of talent.
He's a great talent. And again, will fit in with the team and all that. So the program is clearly, and you know, we're podding today, so he may commit within the next 12 hours for all we know.
Well, we do have the podcast jinx that goes on. So we'll have to just keep an eye on that. A couple other recruiting notes. Now, Race Thompson is a name that may be familiar to those of you who follow recruiting. He's another power forward. He's from Minnesota. He was at Marquette Madness last year. He actually committed on Sunday to Indiana. He is in reclassifying to 2017, by the way. So he's going to be at Indiana this fall. So he's off the board. I think I would guess the Marquette's recruitment of him really cooled with, again, when Marquette added another forward in Morrow and still pursued Hauser. Probably just not a great fit for Race Thompson at Marquette, so he found a good fit at Indiana. Torrance Watson is a guard, a swingman that they'd been recruiting. He committed to Ohio State, so he's off the board. The big name that Marquette is still involved with is Quentin Grimes, who's a point guard from Houston. But when you look at his offers, I think Marquette's really, really got their work cut out for him there. Kansas, Arizona, Kentucky, Duke also heavily involved. So I can't say I'm personally too optimistic that Marquette could get even a visit from Quentin Grimes, much less a commitment, but we'll kind of see how that goes. I mean, there are a few other guys out there. I guess the name maybe to watch if they're going to add a guard would be Jonathan Williams, who's a top 100 kid. He's a guard. He said in interviews in the past that Marquette has told them he is a top priority. So if Marquette's going to add a guard in this recruiting class, he would probably be the name I would keep an eye out on. So I think from a depth chart perspective, Phil, adding a guard, particularly a point guard, would be nice. But other than the pie-in-the-sky dream of Quentin Grimes, I don't know if there's a point guard out there that Marquette is really all that close on right now.
Yeah, no, I think you take a tremendous point guard if you can for this season, knowing that point guard likely doesn't play point guard as much as you might other. I mean, I suppose if they're a pure point guard that you can play Howard or Wowsy on off ball, depending on.
Well, keep in mind this point guard would come in next year.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yep,
Rousey's
you're right.
Gone.
Yes,
so like
right.
for 2018, Marquette is going to need a backup point guard.
That is true,
in my opinion. That while they've said they're going to work on Greg Elliott there. Saying you're going to develop a guy into a point guard gives me some pause.
Yep.
You're either a point guard or you're not, and so we'll see how that works out. But I would like a guy who is the point guard on his high school team and who is a point guard for his AAU team and is projected as a point guard for college and possibly professional ball. So that would be if they don't get Joey Hauser, or even if they do get Joey Hauser, I still would love
probably
to see
need
Marquette.
A point guard.
Yeah, so again, I think that's kind of what I'm looking for in recruiting. Number one, will Joey Hauser come on board? If he does, it's awesome. If not, good luck to him, as long as it's not Wisconsin. And then hopefully you get a point guard of some variety, and I think that Marquette would be in pretty good shape for 2018. So
yeah, and you got to be always recruiting, and we say it every time, but. Don't get freaked out that, you know, oh, Joey Hauser's not coming because they offered to a bunch of players. You never know how the roster turns out come a year from now.
And if they add two commits, they say, oh, who's leaving? Who's leaving? Worry about that later. Someone may just decide to leave on their own. So Marquette, while it seems like that they're kind of wrapping up the 2018 recruiting as they're waiting on Joey Hauser and looking at two or three other guys pretty closely. There looks like they're really looking at some more 2019 and 2020 guys going forward, but Marquette is going to be involved with 2018 kids all the way into the spring, whether their scholarship allotment is full or not. All right, Phil, before we get out of here, we definitely have to talk about the basketball tournament, which was the exciting news from the weekend. A group of Marquette alumni, if you're not familiar with this thing, where have you been? This basketball tournament that goes on in the summer that is full of some alumni teams and some just guys who used to play college ball and are friends and got together and formed teams. Marquette's team, which is now called Golden Eagles, it was called Golden Eagles Alumni last year. They've shortened it to just Golden Eagles, which is all well and good. They won two games, so they're in the Super 16, as they call it, not the Sweet 16. So they will be moving on to Brooklyn, which I think that round begins on Thursday of this week. Well, they will play a team of Kansas State alumni. And as always, Phil, I love watching this thing. It's great seeing guys who used to wear the Marquette uniform and are still out there representing the university. What did you like? Did you get to watch a couple of the games this weekend? What did you take away from what you saw?
Yeah, I saw a number of – I saw both games. I didn't see all of both games, but I saw a large portion of both games. One, it's just fun. Like, I don't know. It feels like, to a certain extent, yes, the talent level is significantly lower, but the games largely feel like NBA All-Star games that with effort, where it's – defense is not always what you would hope it to be, but it's great to see some good offensive basketball, and quite frankly, Dwight Bikes just decided to go off on in Saturday evening's game, and I think at one point he hit five threes in a row. It was
he was on fire. Dwight Bikes, the progression in his game since he left Marquette has been remarkable. He's been in the mix for NBA contracts. I think some teams are a little weary. It seems crazy to say this, but he's getting a little long in the tooth to be an NBA free agent without much experience. I think he's like 28 now. So I think some teams are a little bit shy to sign him as a free agent when there are younger guys out there that they could possibly develop. But, I mean, it looks like the Knicks considered him. The Mavericks considered him. He had a great summer league with the Mavericks. But, even if he doesn't get picked up by an NBA team, he's going to go back to Europe or China or somewhere and make plenty of money. So Dwight played really well on Saturday. Devontae Gardner played great. He, like, that poor guy who was guarding Gardner had no chance.
No.
Like, he just backed down and just, you know, his twinkle toes moves around the basket, and he just dominated that guy. And the other guy I was really impressed with was Juan Anderson, who played a great game on Sunday.
Yeah.
He had some big shots, really hustling on defense. You know, the long athletic player that we always kind of knew Juan to be, he played really well. And so from what I've seen so far from Marquette, or the Golden Eagles alumni squad, I should say, look really good. Of course, Jamil just looks like a different class of athlete going against some of these guys he's playing with. Like, Jamil just kind of looks like an NBA player. And who knows, by the end of this week, he may officially be an NBA player the way he played in the summer league, because it looks like the Clippers are considering him for a two-way contract. But Jamil looks like a guy who should be in the NBA.
Yeah, it was interesting. One of the things that made me laugh was when the announcer, speaking of Devontae Gardner, when the announcer said, "Well, he's well known for his defense," and I kind of was a little bit startled. Like, has this guy seen basketball at all? But
the color guy really didn't care for Marquette. Did you?
No.
He's like, "Oh, you go there goes Jerome McNeil complaining again. Yep, he's out there complaining." So I try not to be that guy who says the announcer hates my team, but I think the color guy for the TBT really disliked the Marquette squad.
He did, and it was confirmed. He said something to Brian Wardle, who's there's a Bradley alumni team, and they're actually playing in Peoria. Wardle was there talking to the guy, and he made comment about not caring about Marquette, the color announcer dude. So I don't know what that's about, but...
You mad, bro?
Yeah,
sorry.
Apparently. apparently we hit his dog or something. I don't know what's going on there. But no, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, the one thing to keep in mind going forward with this team is if Marquette may lose one or two of these guys, especially if Jamil signs an NBA contract this week, he may not be able to play. But Trent Lockett may join the team because he's on the roster, and he didn't play this weekend because he was still wrapping up summer league with the Atlanta Hawks. So I would expect although Trent Lockett was on the roster last year, and I don't think he played in a game.
He did not play last year at all, no.
But he was on the roster. But he's on the roster again this year. Again, he was with the Hawks this week. So if, you know, if we lose Jamil, it's great news for Jamil and good for him. But if that does happen, Trent Lockett could hopefully take his place and help Marquette hopefully get four more wins, and then we all get to split $2 million.
Well, and do keep in mind that as they do have now, they get more expensive as they go along, but they do have the option to buy additional players onto their roster. And one player that I know season just wrapped up that I'd love to have on this team, I think he'd be the right mix for what's on the team now, is Lazar Hayward. He's been playing in Latin America.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that's what he was doing. But I don't know where that money comes from when you add a player.
Can you take a loan against your eventual $2 million win?
Yeah, do they just like look at Wes Matthews and say, "Hey, bro, I know you made about $15 million last year. I was wondering if you could fork over a couple thousand and help us add a player."
He's coaching again. I don't know. The way the game started on Saturday, it looked like his job might be in trouble. He was on the hot seat, I think.
Yeah, I do have to say this about Wes Matthews, though. I love that he's doing this because he absolutely does not have to.
Right.
He makes, like I said, what is he making? Somewhere between $15 and $20 million from the Mavericks.
Yep.
He should probably just be on a beach or playing golf somewhere, just enjoying his offseason. But he's decided to spend a good chunk of his summer coaching this team and trying to help these guys who don't make nearly as much money as he does playing basketball try to cash in on a $2 million prize. And I think that is just so great that Wes Matthews does this, because he is under absolutely no obligation to do it. So the fact that he takes time, and, you know, Diener takes time, you know, while you know, the rest of the coaching staff is recruiting. I guess Diener, because of his title, I guess he can't go on the road recruiting, so he makes the most of his time trying to help these guys as well. Dan Fitzgerald takes time out of his day to help put this team together. So between Diener and Fitzgerald and Wes, they did a great job putting this team together, getting all these guys, because Marquette is the perfect school for this tournament because they produce a lot of pros that aren't in the NBA. So that they have one of the best teams for this tournament. So I think they all did a great job putting this thing together. And I think I got nothing but gratitude for these guys for doing it, because it gives me something to watch in the summer when I need a Marquette fix.
Right. Well, and I'm really curious to see how many of the other teams in this tournament have their universities or some connection that is backing them as much as Marquette is, right? I mean, because the Marquette opened the OWL, had the players in for the alumni in for practice. They even practiced.
Yeah, they had a mini camp.
Yeah,
and I don't follow it as closely.
The current players and
yeah. Yeah, I don't know how many teams do that. There can't be that many.
No.
I mean, I think less than half the teams in there are actually alumni teams. So it's less than 50% for sure. So very few of them have the kind of first-class minicamp that the Marquette team did. Like you said, they got to scrimmage against the Marquette University team, which is awesome, which is a great experience for those kids, and also great training for these guys who are getting ready to go and try to win a big prize. So I think it all worked out beautifully for everyone, so I think it's just terrific.
Yeah, and it's a super fun thing to do. I mean, other than baseball, there's really not much going on. So
yeah. So I've certainly enjoyed watching it. Hopefully maybe we'll have more to talk about next week. If they keep on winning, we may break down the TBT a little more. By the way, before we get out of here, I do want to bid a fond farewell and good luck to Matt Velasquez, who has been the beat writer for the Journal Sentinel. He is
a very good one at that.
He has been a great beat, but he's, I guess, called a promotion. He is now going to be covering the Milwaukee Bucks for the Journal Sentinel. So I don't know who is going to be writing for Marquette. I hope we get someone who does as good a job as Matt did. I thought Matt did a great job. He's been on the beat for probably 2 or 3 years now, I think.
I think since just before Wojo.
Yeah, because it's been 4 or 5 years then. So time flies. But I think, again, he's done a great job with it, and good luck to him. But we'll miss. I will definitely miss his coverage of the of the Marquette team, because I think he's done a great job with that. Hopefully the Journal Sentinel will put someone who does as good a job as Matt did on the beat.
Yep, I agree. I think it was outstanding to have him. I think he spent more time even than he needed. Now, the bar was relatively low because the previous individual was something less than stellar. But
The bottom line is it was just nice having a guy who, from what I could tell, was basically at practice every day. You know, he was a true beat writer. Every time there was media availability, he was there.
Yep.
And he traveled on the road with the team, which not a lot of newspapers can afford to do that, is, you know, send a guy on the road with a college team everywhere they go. So I'm sure the bummer for Matt is, you know, he doesn't get to go to Maui now.
Right. Yeah, he made that jump a little too early. Maybe with his new Bucks coverage salary, he can afford to go on his own.
Yeah, so maybe he should just try to petition, like, look, can I do the Marquette beat until mid-November?
Yeah. The NBA doesn't really get going until December, so.
Yeah, so that's what I would do for him. But hey, anyway, good luck to him. But I think that's going to about do it for our midsummer check-in of Marquette basketball. Just want to check in on the schedule. And we always welcome your feedback. You can always hit us up on Twitter. I am Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF 23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can also hit us up on Facebook. There's a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. Also, please go on iTunes, rate us, review us, download us, take us wherever you go. Phil, any more thoughts as we wrap up our little midsummer check-in here?
Nope, just want you to keep cool and everyone else to enjoy the rest of the summer. The fall's going to be here before we know it.
Yeah, not sure when we're going to do our next podcast again, depending how the TBT goes. Maybe we'll check in again here in a week or two. And again, who knows if there's any breaking news in recruiting that could influence as well. But you follow us on Twitter, you'll let us know. You will know when the next podcast is up. And of course, if you subscribe on iTunes, you'll always have it. So keep that in mind.
That is correct. iTunes is where it's at.
Appreciate you guys listening. Until next time, seashells and balloons, everyone.